following podcast is part of the Underdog Sports Podcasting Network. For a full list of our shows, as well as breaking sports news and engaging feature stories, visit us at www.theunderdogsports.com.
We might be Underdog Sports, but we came here to win. The most legit podcast, that's why we know you're tuning in. We cover the biggest news, we underdogs, but we can't lose. So trust the process, yes you, cause we got Chris and Anshu to bless you. With the best features, best stories, we diving deep like a Lambo leak. Wake up kid and stop snoring, we on point just like this beat. Bring the passion like the talk pound, in the cold, get a gold brand. Sit back and raise the cap, cause we start the show like right now.
Welcome to The Underdog, episode number 66. I'm Chris Horvidell, joined by Anshu Khanna. Anshu, it's celebration time, buddy.
Are you getting tired of these parades?
I never get tired of them. Being a champion is hard. A lot of people don't realize the stress it puts on us champions. And it's just sort of the cross we bear.
Yeah, I can tell it's really weighing on you. It's a tough, not all heroes wear capes.
Congratulations to the Villanova Wildcats, the 2018 men's NCAA basketball champions, second time in 2 years, and definitely not as much fun as the 2016 championship game was, where it was back and forth and Chris Jenkins hit that crazy shot at the buzzer to get the win, but I will take it nonetheless.
Yeah, I would think so. This team would wax that team, by the way, even though there are a few holdovers, obviously Brunson. This team was so dominant relative to the rest of the country. It just, I know they didn't have to run up against Duke or Zona or Virginia, but man, they were so incredibly dominant. I mean, good teams win, great teams cover. They covered with ease in every single game this tournament. And really throughout the season, they were clearly the best team. So I would put them up there in the last 20 years of one of the best teams in college basketball.
Yeah, first team since like 1967 to win every single one of their games in the tournament by double digits. And first time since the 2005 that the leading scoring team in the country won the championship. Yeah. Also,
Tar Heels, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I was not really keeping track of this during the year. I was a little bit surprised when this came up because I guess I'm so used to what Villanova is that I don't think of them in terms of being this prolific three-point shooting team. But obviously this year they were, made the most three-pointers of any team in college basketball history, breaking the VMI record. What, just an incredible team this year.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it speaks to Jay Wright and the way that he's catered his game kind of along the NBA lines. But this is a team that is loath to take mid-range jumpers. I mean, they can hit them, but they don't need to. And the way that four out, one in, it kind of, you know, they were ahead of their time. You remember, obviously, those old Lowry teams.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they had some really good Allen Ray and those guys, and they were kind of early to this game. And this team, in many ways, reminds me of that team. They just, that team wasn't quite as talented and didn't have, you know, the Mike Albritton, the kind of versatility and athleticism that this team does.
Right.
And, man, it is impressive to see. It was impressive to watch them run a train through. I mean, honestly, I didn't think Kansas played that poorly against them, and they just were so dominant. And you know, you wonder what would have happened had they run up against Duke or Virginia, but you know, the idea is I think that they would have rolled through them too.
Yeah, what an incredibly fun year, and we will miss Jalen, we will miss Michael Bridges. Oh boy, I'll tell you what, the one downside of last night, buddy. Prior to last night, I was not concerned about Dante DiVincenzo heading to the NBA, and now he's at least going to declare and test the waters. I can't imagine he won't.
Wow.
So, man, losing him is going to be – that's hard for next year.
They're not going to lose him. He's not going anywhere.
There's no way. The argument is that he's 21 years old already. You know, next year he'll be 22 going into the draft as a junior. And that age does get held against you. Obviously, as the focal point of that offense next year, he has a chance to put up really big numbers. And there's certainly things to work on. You know, his handle is not an NBA handle right now. His defense is not NBA defense. Well, actually, maybe his defense is NBA defense with how people play defense in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
But his defense is substandard. And there's things to work on. God, I hope he comes back. I can't imagine that given how the rules are for underclassmen right now, that he and Amari Spellman won't test the waters and go through workouts and get feedback.
No law, no no reason not to. I mean, there's nothing to lose.
No, I just, oh, man, I hope we have both of those guys in the lineup next year.
I mean, I would be more worried about Spellman than DiVincenzo. I know that this is probably DiVincenzo peaking in some ways, but and that being said, he's likely to be not maybe not the most talented player, but certainly like the one of the focal points, if not the focal point of the offense next year.
Oh, for sure.
And I think we saw, and you probably saw it over the course of the year watching them more than I did, but you know, this is a kid. He's not your typical, let's just say, he's not your typical white two guard or something.
No.
This guy can handle, he can get to the basket. His blocking, I mean, the blocks that he had were supremely athletic. He's got a role to play in the NBA if he wants it. But I think that that's a ways off. And, you know, I think this is the ultimate. I know what you're saying with the tread on the tires and the age and all that, but I think this is a guy that will be well served when he gets told by the advisory committee to go ahead and come back to Villanova next year.
Yeah, so there was a little bit of Dante DiVincenzo news today. He actually deleted his Twitter because let this be a lesson to all of you idiots out there. Don't write stupid stuff on Twitter. Just don't do it. It will come back. People will find it. He deleted his Twitter because there were some defamatory and sort of homophobic tweets, apparently. There were some tweets that may or may not have used the N-word while quoting song lyrics. Just really stupid stuff. Avoid it.
Take it off. You know, you're going to play a role for a championship-caliber team. I mean, like, why put yourself in that spot? Like, just have a brain on your shoulders. And I mean, see, this is another reason why I think that the NBA will not come calling next year. I mean, this guy's got to prove. I have no reason to believe that he still feels those ways. I mean, I guess I have no reason to believe he doesn't, but
sure.
I generally assume he doesn't. But, you know, like, this is an automatic red flag, obviously, for anyone that wants to use a high pick on a player, especially in a very liberal league like the NBA, relatively speaking. I think that that will be part of the calculus and why DiVincenzo will not be going to the draft next year.
I love the reactionary responses too, like Wilbon, who had that incredibly dumb tweet a couple of years ago about Ben Simmons saying he would take Bryce Johnson over him 100 times out of 100. Thank you for that, by the way. We'll take Ben 100 times out of 100. But
and anyone with a brain.
He suggested that DiVincenzo may be picked higher than Trae Young at this point.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Like,
yes, it is.
Why? It's like, I don't know. This is like classic clickbait from a guy who doesn't even get what clickbait is. So,
right.
You know, just really stupid and, you know, reactionary stuff, like you said. But, you know, that's classic Wilbon right there, or new age Wilbon, I guess.
Classic Wilbon. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hey guys, Chris here. I wanted to talk to you about an app that I use every single day. So you can believe me when I say that if you love fantasy baseball, then you need to try my new favorite app, Draft. It's daily fantasy baseball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league. But these drafts only last for one night, and once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire, just set it and forget it. And the best part? You play for cold, hard cash and get paid out the next day. Drafts start for just $1, so there is a draft for everyone. As I mentioned earlier, I have been glued to my draft app for a while now, mainly taking part in baseball and basketball drafts. I've done it all. 10-person drafts, 6-person drafts, 3-person drafts. But I have to say my personal favorites are the head-to-head drafts for the NBA and the MLB. That way it is me against one other person, and honestly, I like those odds. I've already won a handful of the $10 head-to-head drafts, and the money is starting to really add up. So join me on Draft today. Just search Draft in the App Store or play right from your computer at draft.com. For a limited time only, all of our Underdog listeners get a free entry into a real money baseball draft when you make your first deposit. You're not going to beat that deal. All you have to do is use our promo code UNDERDOG. That's right, play a real money game for free just by using the promo code UNDERDOG when you make your first deposit. Search Draft in the App Store or go to draft.com and enter that promo code UNDERDOG. Who knows, maybe we'll go head-to-head. may the best man win. And now back to the show. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm not as concerned about Spellman as you think maybe I should be. I really think he's 6'8 and a half. So I don't know what he is in the NBA.
I don't think he's going, to be clear. I would say that the chances of him going are better than those of DiVincenzo going. I know that we've seen players capitalize on their draft stock based on the tournament, but you know, I think there's like a 5% chance of DiVincenzo, and I'd say it's like 7 for Omari Spellman, and you know, both will be back in Villanova next year, and they'll be right there to try for 3 and 4 years as long as Jay Wright doesn't go somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think Jay's going to leave. I have faith that Jay's going to stay. He's had plenty of NBA interest before, and he's turned it down. Now he's 2 years older. His family is so ingrained into that neighborhood. I honestly think the only way he would have left is if he could have gotten the 76ers job before Brett Brown did.
Ooh, really? Interesting. Is he a Philly guy? I'm not aware of his background.
Great question, but he's been in Philadelphia the majority of his life. I know he's an Eagles season ticket holder. He's super involved in the community. I don't 100% know where he originates from, though.
Interesting. Really, so I say that because,
yeah,
you know, there's this, and this is a kind of a abstract rumor that I'm sort of going to tie to Jay Wright, which is just, did you see the stuff about the Bucks with Doc Rivers and I can't remember who else potentially going after the Bucks job if and when Joe Prunty gets the axe?
He was born in Northampton, Pennsylvania, was Jay Wright. No, I did not see that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's the rumor. It's like a Bucks source basically said it, that it was Rivers, and I can't remember who the other one. And granted, that very different scenarios. Jay Wright is as hot a coaching candidate as you can possibly have.
Yeah.
And, you know, Doc Rivers is Doc Rivers, but, you know, I don't think that he's – I think at this point, I think many people would rather take their chances on Wright than go ahead and go back to that well with Rivers. So, you know, I it was just interesting to me it peripherally that those two might be linked. You know, like if you were to be looking for something, that might be the case. But I agree with you. I don't think there's any way he goes. And usually you'll see a coach go in one of two scenarios. Either he's going to get busted for a bunch of recruiting stuff.
Right.
Or, you know, like his greatest group of players has basically run their course. I don't think that this Nova group is done yet. You know, I think that they've got a couple guys left. And, you know, and really they've only recruited better and better, more or less. So, you know, I don't see any reason for him to go. I just thought that was interesting as like a tangent between those two rumors, I guess.
Yeah, no, you know, obviously everybody wants the next Brad Stevens, but Jay Wright's not Brad Stevens. They're completely different basketball coaches.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, I don't know. I would be very
Brad Stevens is way more of a player's coach than Jay Wright is.
Really? I don't necessarily agree with that.
No.
I mean,
Jay Wright seems like
the absolute best player's coach. And, like, both did it without super great recruits. I know Nova's gotten better, but they've gotten a McDonald's All-American maybe once a year, but they're not, like, loading up on them. I what I've seen about Wright is that he could definitely do that. And if you look at the way they've shot the ball, and he was clearly way ahead of his time, with the perimeter oriented game. I don't know. I think that's a matter of opinion than fact.
Well, I'm very close to that particular team, so it's educated opinion. Let's put it like that.
Okay. So what? Why? You don't think that he's a player's coach? You think that the players don't like playing for him?
No, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that the players don't like playing for him. I think he's outstanding in the function of being a college coach. Because he is very like, we're going to do it this way. This is how it goes. This is a very strict offense. We're going to run this. We're going to run that. We're going to do this. We're going to do it my way. I don't know how well that goes over wearing $5,000 suits on the sidelines, telling NBA players what to do.
Hmm. Okay, fair enough. I would have guessed that Stevens was more controlling over the strategy. But so are you saying that Wright is less of a strategic coach? Like, would he have adjusting to
I think it's a disposition thing. I have no doubt that he has the intellect and the basketball mind to be a very good NBA coach. I just don't know that he has the personality to be a very good NBA coach.
Interesting. Okay, so he's more of like a Coach K type, like wants to rule the castle kind of thing?
A little bit more. And he very much likes being the big man on that Villanova campus, too.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah, the cat, like ruling the campus, essentially. And that he certainly is that. And
yes.
With two titles in 3 years, he's earned that. But it's, you know, it's an interesting situation. I don't think that he's going to go by any means, but I just... It seems to be on the radar, and
oh yeah,
I imagine he'll get called. I mean, we've seen it with great coaches. It's just, will he avoid taking the bait? Because almost every coach tries it once. If you look at the guys that have gotten called, that
yeah.
whose games aren't like, you know, like Coach K, you know, famously almost was a Laker coach, and you know, we've seen Pitino and Calipari, Billy Donovan,
mm-hmm.
You know, obviously Brad Stevens. So everyone's. A lot of these guys have gotten bites at the apple, and I mean, the only ones really that haven't are like Boeheim and Coach K and, you know, I guess Roy Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that all those guys are more known for their recruiting than maybe their coaching chops. So, yeah, but I'll defer to you on that because, like you said, you're very close to that situation.
I'm very excited about this team next year, though, assuming Dante and Amari come back. You know, I'll tell you what, I'm not the Phil Booth fan that a lot of other people are. I'm not sure how you justify starting Phil Booth next year if DiVincenzo and Amari Spellman come back. Because, look, Dante and Amari are starters. Eric Paschal's a starter. Javon Quinterly comes in as a McDonald's All-American point guard.
He'll start.
If you bring in a McDonald's All-American, he's a starter. And then, you know, the question is, are you going with another? Is it Quinterly at the one, DiVincenzo at the two, Paschal at the three, Spellman at the four, Spellman playing the five? You have a top 50 recruit last year by the name of Jermaine Samuels, who's ready to take a bigger role in this team next year, a big-time scorer, big-time athlete on the wing. You know, three top 50 recruits this year. In addition to Quinterly, they have maybe the best shooter in the class, power forward by the name of Cole Swider, and another super athletic 6'5 scoring wing in Brandon Slater, both you know, in that like 35 to 50 range in recruiting. And that's kind of where Villanova has done so well. In that range, like the sub,
yeah.
just off the one and done trail.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, look at no further than Jalen Brunson. I think he's the absolute perfect. Although I think at the time many people thought Jalen Brunson was going to be,
yeah.
you know, a one and done. I mean, I did.
Sure.
He actually
Spellman
went
too.
To my went to my rival high school. Jalen Brunson did.
Oh wow!
So there you go. Well, yeah. So all right. What are the chances? Are there any that Jalen Brunson comes back?
No. He's graduated. He's
none. Done. He could come back though, right? He's not like
he's a true junior.
I mean,
he's a true junior, but he graduated in 3 years. It's no secret Jalen Brunson has played his last game for the Villanova Wildcats.
Yeah,
you know,
certainly sounded like it on the stage yesterday.
Right.
No, like very clearly seemed to say he's going to walk off into the sunset. But if he did, he could become one of the most decorated players in the history of the game.
Oh, well, Villanova, I mean, technically, we could return our top 10 players from this year's team. Because, you know, Michael Bridges is also only an underclassman.
I feel like it means less for someone like Bridges as opposed to someone like Brunson.
Sure, I'm just saying that the possibility, while it's not likely under any circumstances, the possibility exists that everyone could come back. They just won't. You know, Jalen and Bridges will be gone. Bridges is probably... You know, he's a little bit older. Maybe he slides a little bit. He's kind of a functional piece rather than a piece you build around. He's a lottery pick, mm-hmm. probably a late lottery pick when it's all said
yeah,
and done, I
think.
And Brunson, I love what Jalen Brunson has done over these last 3 years. I don't know what he projects to in the NBA, given his style of play.
Completely agree.
Not a big-time athlete, likes to post up and score. Shooting's good,
yeah.
but... it's a little bit of a slow release.
That was my thought when I saw him. I thought, look, what are the, I mean, yeah, he won player of the year. There's not much he can do to improve his stock. It really doesn't make any sense from a basketball perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the same time, it's just like, I just, like you said, his game is so based on posting up and doing all the stuff off of that. And like, I think he could potentially improve his ball handling and his shooting and maybe like improve his stock in that way, but really like what is there to do? And on the other hand, like you said, Bridges seems like a late lottery type. And where do we see Brunson going next year? in terms of a range?
I think that his absolute ceiling is very, very late first round into that, like,
wow.
Like the I put him in the 25 to 45 range.
This isn't a guy that, like, needs the money, though, right? I know that there were those issues with Rick, but, you know, I don't know. I feel like he could.
But he's 1-2, you know? He's completed this challenge, and I thank him for his time and his service.
I think that's fair. It's funny because, like, when he came in, I just was so sold on him. And, like, the more you saw of him, the less I see the clean translation of the NBA. I mean, look, he's going to play, but it's going to be weird, I think. It's going to be something that we haven't really seen a lot of if he's going to be good at the next level.
He needs to fit a scheme. He needs to fit a team. And but I think I don't see any reason Jalen Brunson can't have an 8 to 10 year career backing up better players.
Totally agree. Completely agree.
So we do have I mentioned we have Javon Quinterly coming in, who I expect to be a one and done next year, regardless of how he plays. Here's a question I want to pose to you. And this was asked to me yesterday or the day before, I forget. In the history of both programs, can you name the one and dones from Michigan and Villanova?
Oh, man. Do you have a number?
I was given a blank question, but obviously I do have a little bit more information there.
It was Weber a one and done?
Weber was a sophomore.
Okay. None of the Fab Five were then. So Glenn Robinson.
I went Fab Five and then GR3 were the first two people, the first thing that came to my head. Because I knew the Villanova answer.
Okay, Villanova is going to be tough for me. I would say, who was on that last team, the last title team? I don't think any of those guys were one and dones, were they?
No, sir.
Okay.
Kyle was a sophomore.
Who was that?
I think Kyle Lowry was a sophomore.
Lowry, yep.
Corey Stokes left as a sophomore, I believe.
Wow. I want to say there was a big athletic four that went, what was his name? I know this. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Big time draft prospect.
Yeah. Oh, man.
New Jersey kid. I was incredibly excited to get him in Villanova.
Was he good for Nova? I'm not going to remember it off the top of my head.
He was a very, very high pick in the NBA draft. He was fine. The one and only one and done in Villanova history is one Tim Thomas.
Oh man, yes, Tim Thomas. That is a blast from the past.
So
yeah,
I struggled with
great
Michigan.
Great big ball bands.
Because Michigan, I went exactly where you went. I thought Weber for a second, but then I thought it was 2 years. Thought GR3, but then I remembered he was in that class with Stauskas, and they were both sophomores.
Yeah, McGarry was in that class too, but McGarry, he obviously got hurt.
DJ Wilson, last year, was a sophomore.
And obviously, Trey Burke was older. He was a junior, senior, I think.
Has there ever been a one and done? Has there ever been? Okay. You want the answer or you want to think this out?
There isn't one?
I'm asking you. Do you want the answer? Or do you want to think this out a little
bit? I want the answer. I'm guessing that this was a trick question. They have zero.
As far as I can tell, there is one player to leave Michigan after 1 year, and that is Jamal Crawford.
Oh wow! I think Jamal Crawford was a sophomore though.
I don't think you're right.
Was he a freshman, or was he a freshman in a year where they allowed high school players?
That's much more likely. So
yeah, I remember it being 1 year older than everyone.
Jamal Crawford was in fact a freshman.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That is a great name. Jamal Crawford and Tim Thomas. Some great Bulls ties right there.
Drafted by the Cavs, traded to your Bulls.
Yep.
Gave up Chris Mim for that.
Yeah, Chris Mim, just threw it out there. Yeah, that's crazy. That draft was, I believe, Marcus Fizer was drafted by the Bulls in that draft as well.
Marcus Fizer, yes.
It was they had the 4 and the 7 or something. Yeah, or 4 and 8. Yeah, that was just a terrible season. Jamal Tinsley, I believe, in that draft. But yes, there's some fun facts for you.
Crawford's obviously looking at it historically. Crawford's one of the best players in this class. But this was a terrible draft. This was the Kmart, Stromile, Swift, Darius Miles draft at the top. So Fizer is drafted right in front of Mike Miller and DeMar Johnson. Miller had a long career. Johnson had a promising career but got hurt.
Miller might be the best player of all those guys.
Collier.
I mean, Crawford.
Well,
but...
so Hato Turkoglu's got to be in that conversation. Quentin Richardson. Jamal McGlure got picked a little bit later on. Oh boy,
bunch of role players at least. I mean, not guys that completely fizzled out. But the top is so bad.
Yeah, this was a second round pick, but the best player in this draft was Michael Redd.
Oh yeah,
and he went quite a bit later. I've been trying really hard to get Kenyon Martin on my show. I've been pushing for it.
Oh yeah, got to get the question mark tattoo. That was Fizer.
I want to find out where Kmart got the lip tattoo on his neck from, because I want that.
That's what it was, the lip tattoo. Yes. Wow.
So yes,
what a guy.
I'm excited. He's close with one of the people that I've had on the show before, so I've been I've been putting out some feelers.
Nice.
Major out of nowhere trade in the NFL today.
Good
major
Lord.
Trade.
Yeah.
So the Rams acquire Brandon Cooks from the Patriots. Along with a fourth-round pick in exchange for a first- and sixth-round selection. All right, so Brandon Cooks, 24 years old, traded for first-round picks in two consecutive years. Where did this come from?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll tell you what, though. My first reaction was the Patriots are trading for Odell Beckham.
That was my next question.
That already has been shot down by Jason LaCanfora, but, man, that is what I immediately thought. You have two late first-round picks. And, you know, a team that may lose Gronk, if not this year, the next year.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're looking towards your next star quarterback and assembling pieces around him and having very little on the books long term, which is what the Patriots have after giving up Nate Solder. And, you know, obviously Brady is going to be gone and now Cooks is gone. And
Brady may be gone.
I mean,
he may play till he's 50 years old.
True. I mean, I assume at some point, and even if he is there, he's barely making any money, but they're not on the hook for anything. So. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy. I can't believe that this deal happened, and it came out of the clear blue sky, which is typical Patriots business, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they got Cooks out of nowhere. They traded him out of nowhere just about the same time of the year. You know, Cooks had 65 catches for 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns in New England last year. Never quite seemed to really fit in. And, you know, to that same extent, I mean, I didn't see that LaCanfora had already said it's not going to happen. But I don't know that OBJ fits in New England. I could see that being
a
very ugly fit. But, you know, it's also the Patriots. Maybe they want to pull out this major move, give Tom Brady one incredible target to try and get another championship. I don't know. With the Patriots, you can't rule it out. But I don't know if OBJ is classic Patriot.
I mean, they've done it with Moss, though. And, I mean,
of an
they
old
tried
Moss.
T.O. That's
and an
true.
Old T.O.
They never pay big money for receivers. It's just not in their MO. So,
well, exactly right.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't, I agree, but I'm just saying that was my first thought. It sounds like it was one of your first thoughts too.
Yeah.
And you know, now you wonder then, Benjamin Albright, who is a really good follow, really close to the Browns. He comes out on Twitter and says that the Patriots are interested. And he got a text about Josh Rosen. That was the name that he came across for the Patriots.
Okay.
So the Pats now have 23-31. And, you know, how much more does it take to move up to, say, 5?
A lot.
They have the Niners pick from Garoppolo.
For a quarterback, it takes – all right, let's see. I'm gonna go to Tankathon. I want to see the current – I feel like we should really be sponsored by Tankathon, by the way.
We should. We should tell him. That's our guy. We've got a loose affiliation.
Matt is our guy. I should tell him that he owes us some money because we talk about him on the show all the time. And
oh,
I'm sure
yeah.
he'll be receptive to that. let's see. All right, the New England Patriots currently have the number 23, 31, 43, 63 picks.
Ooh.
And then basically the last pick in the third round. So, I know the trade value charts are kind of antiquated at this point, and you're going to pay a lot more based on, you know, any number of factors, including what's already been paid. The Jets certainly set things pretty high. But, so you know what would have been a great move? All right, let's remember these numbers. 43 and 63. All right, so 43 gets us 470. 63 gets us 276. We'll round that to 270 just for kicks and call that 740. 31 gets us 600, so we're at 1340. 23 gets us 740, so that's 2,080 points. 2,080 points is enough to get you the. It falls in between 3 and 4. So look, Cleveland is not going to trade the number 4 pick for two late first round picks. There's no, like, that's just not going to happen. And they.
But you know who might.
I don't know. I think Denver wants a quarterback.
I kind of think so too, but
that would
know.
Be. I don't know. Is it appealing enough, like, for Cleveland to own most of the first two rounds? Like, at that point, they would have what? They would have 1, 23, 31, 35, 41. 63, 64.
Okay, then you flip 23 and 31 for Beckham.
So they would have eight of the top 64 picks in the draft going into it.
Probably not. I agree with you that I don't think they're going to do it. I could see Denver doing it. I could see them say, look. We had Baker and we had Allen in the Senior Bowl. We weren't super thrilled. We signed Case Keenum to this deal. You know, we were cool with Mason Rudolph. He was much more of an Elway type anyway. Maybe we slide down and we take him down at 23 or 31 and just, you know, go from there. But I it wouldn't shock me if, like, although, yeah, I don't know. If Rosen's sitting there at 5, they're definitely thinking Rosen, I think.
Right. They would have to trade Rosen in order for this to happen. And I don't think that's – I think they're way more likely to move up than they are move down.
I tend to agree. I don't know if this is smoke or not, but the more the stuff I see, the more I feel like Rosen's going to be there at 5, which is just crazy to me that that's the case because I think he's the best quarterback in this class and just doesn't make much sense. But – Yeah. You know, I don't know that this Patriots thing's real or not, but I do feel like 23 and 31 is a weird place to be for them.
Yeah.
And I just don't buy that they're going to make those two picks. I would say it's less than 50-50 that they do that.
You know who I like Darius Geis for them at 23 if he's there.
They have so many guys, though.
They don't have the guy.
They don't care about that, though, do they?
You got to start thinking about we need other major contributors on offense rather than just letting Tom Brady carry this team to Super Bowls.
Well, look, here's the flat out absolute truth is that they are not going into next year with their current receivers. They will use those picks in some way, whether it's trading around or whatever. But one of those picks is going to be a receiver, might be DJ Moore. And, you know, I mean, if not both of them, I mean, who knows? Look, this is an old receiving group when you think of Edelman and, you know, some of the other guys that they have. I don't really know what their plan is, but, you know, trading Cooks doesn't get you anywhere in that way, right? And so, like, if they're not trading for Beckham, they're going to do something. And, you know, if any of these rumors are true about Rosen, then now you're SOL without a receiver again. And say you take Geis with one, and you know maybe that is the way. Maybe you try to replace the great receiver with a running back and another receiver. You know, I don't know. It doesn't seem very Patriot-y to actually use two first rounders. It just doesn't make sense. Doesn't compute to me. Maybe Ridley's their guy. You know, you've got that Saban and Belichick connection, right?
You do. You know who feels like a Patriot to me, though? James Washington.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I really think that Ridley could be their guy. Maybe they need to move up ahead of Baltimore to get him. But I know he didn't have a great combine and he's older, but you know, that sort of feels like a Belichick type to me.
Yeah, I mean the older thing's obviously gonna hurt him on draft day. You know, I heard some crazy stat about the NBA draft this year. So, you know, Josh Jackson goes pro last year, he's the number 3 pick, whatever, about 4 pick. And Svi Mihaljuk has played 4 years at Kansas and he is like 2 months younger than Josh Jackson.
Oh my god. How's that possible?
Well, Svi was one of those guys like, who was the other one? I forget. But he was very young. He came over and he wasn't even eligible to declare that first year because he wasn't old enough after coming over from wherever he was playing internationally. So he couldn't declare until he was a sophomore.
Yeah.
And yeah, he is slightly younger than Josh Jackson, who was considerably older than everybody else in the class.
Right. Yeah, that's fun. Crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. Something's gonna happen here for sure, though.
This is insane.
These next four, I guess, just under 4 weeks are gonna be so much fun.
I love this time of the year. It's kind of surprising to me that these trades happen so far in advance. Yeah. I mean, I guess like there's no point in waiting because like. Whatever, if the Rams stop bringing players in for visits, like, all right, obviously they did something, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's also, I could see the Patriots not wanting to announce it either, just knowing the black box that is New England and Bill Belichick. Like, I bet that he would have been more than happy to wait till draft eve or whatever to do it and really mess with people's minds.
Well, I'm sure he would have been. But yeah. I don't know how the Rams would have felt about that, especially with them allegedly in the OBJ sweepstakes.
Yeah.
And you never know what's going to happen. Like, you never know what's going to happen.
What does this mean for right.
Maybe, you know, the Patriots want to wait a little bit. The Rams, I don't know, the Rams signed Jeremy Maclin or Cameron Meredith or somebody like that. And all of a sudden they back off on offering a first round pick. If you have value, you get it done, I think.
Yeah, that's true. So that's true. You do one thing and then it leads to the next. And, you know, I mean, here's my question, though. What does it mean for Beckham? What's like, how does that all work?
I mean, we talked about it a lot on the show last week that unfortunately didn't end up being recorded because of some audio stuff. But
yes.
I mean, you have to think, especially after the lock and for a thing today, because, you know, initially I thought Patriots, must be for OBJ. You have to think, if you believe the reports that OBJ is going to be traded, which have been coming out over the last couple of days, the Browns are in the driver's seat.
For sure. Like, I legitimately can't think of anybody else that... All right, so here's my thought. So Brandon Cook's contract is almost the same as Beckham's. They were drafted the same year.
Yeah.
So they're both...
1 year left,
you know,
both of them.
1 year left, right. So this is the precedent for Beckham. They basically set some cost out there. They got a fourth rounder from the Patriots plus, you know, right? It was the fourth and back, or I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was
fourth
Cooks and a four for a 1 and 6.
Right. So equal it to like a early fifth, basically, because the Patriots draft so late, right?
Sure.
So, okay. So basically it was, so how does that add up for the Beckham deal? So this is the 23rd pick. Now you think of the teams that are involved. It's not like, you know, what's been out there is two firsts for Beckham, but not all firsts are created equal, obviously.
All right.
So
well,
what does that
this?
Mean?
How about this? So.
Take to the chart.
Forget the chart. I think this is easy. I think it requires the Browns to make another trade. It requires the Browns to make the trade with Buffalo. They get the 12 and the 22. Then,
mm-hmm.
so what I
for
would
four.
Say for four, right? So I would say Cleveland gets, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. and whatever filler pick, and the Giants get a swap of 1 and 2 plus 22 and plus 22 and a filler mid-round pick.
Hmm. I think they got to get 12.
I don't know. That number one, you can't erase the value of that number one pick.
I mean, or you just say, like, all right, wink, nod, you're not taking Josh, you're not taking Darnold, right?
I guess, but I don't know if Cleveland does that. And that's the same thing as before, because you never know when some crazy offer is going to get made for that number one pick.
Very true. Maybe something insane happens where the Broncos want to move up to two or move up to one or two. And yeah, I see.
Yeah, all
saying.
Of a sudden,
so,
all of a sudden the Patriots come calling. They're offering their top five picks and a first round pick next year.
Yeah, right. No, that's a fair point. So, boy, so you're saying a swap of one and two and the 22 they have?
Let's call it a swap of one and two, the 22 and a third round pick for basically the two Beckham and a six.
Yeah, I mean, but the one and two swap you're losing if you're the Browns, so.
You think the Browns are giving up too much?
No.
That's what
I'm trying to think. No, I think the Giants aren't getting enough.
Well, they get that number one pick. They get the number one pick. All right, let's do this.
What's the difference between two and one? What did the Bears trade to move up from three to two? They traded a third rounder and then this year's second, right?
I believe so, yes. And that was 3-2, not 2-1. That value is ramped up.
Right. So let's say two and two future. Basically, this year's second and next year's second is the equivalent there.
Sure. Sure.
So you're basically getting a mid to late first and 2 seconds and give up a third or something.
Well, you're getting you're basically getting no. So New England, we've really got to chart all this out. So in this scenario, the Giants would be getting the 22nd pick, effectively 2 second round picks, and a third round
pick. Right, that's what I'm saying. Yep, that's exactly what I'm saying.
And a third round pick for Beckham and a sixth round pick.
That's close.
That's not bad. And even if it's if it's not a third, you can always give up that Eagles pick, which is the last pick in the second round. So
well,
now
look,
it's,
would you
it's
rather
the 22
have,
and three twos.
And you're guaranteed to get your quarterback of the future,
and you're
assuming that's
to get
what you
your
want.
Quarterback. Right. And you're also guaranteeing the Browns get set back a decade by drafting Josh Allen number two.
Right. I mean, value-wise, it's close. I think if I'm the Giants, I probably let's level set on this, though. I think that take a step back. I think the Giants just have no idea what they're doing right now. Like,
agreed.
Edelman is just a mess. They signed Nate Solder to this massive deal, 31-year-old left tackle. They then trade JPP. They have no idea what to do with Beckham. They have the two, but yet they've committed to whatever, a 39-year-old or whatever quarterback, which is what Eli is, and he looks every bit his age.
Yes.
And, you know, I just, like, what are they doing? Are they trying to compete this year, or are they trying to draft their quarterback of the future, or are they trying to split the difference here? And that's the question.
I don't know. I don't think they know.
But you don't draft. Look, you can't undo the Solder thing. You can undo everything else, but you can't mess with the Solder thing. So,
but you can argue that having a good left tackle is only beneficial for having a young quarterback.
Yeah, I guess. But it just doesn't seem. Oh, okay. I guess here's the question. What was the point of the JPP deal?
I don't know what the point
was.
It
was
right
now. Chubb? Like, did they plan on drafting Chubb?
I don't.
I mean,
they were unhappy with JPP. That's the only thing I could think of, is that internally they were unhappy with him. And the other factor with OBJ, though, is that he wants to sign the richest contract in the history of football for a wide receiver. Like, you can't.
Right.
That has to be factored in. You don't just get this guy under contract. You get this guy under contract
totally.
For 1 year and have to give him a butt ton of money.
I completely understand that. And that's why the reason I ask is because how valuable is the move from 2-1? Because if what you're looking for is merely to get, you know, to compete is to compete and, you know, and understanding that the Beckham thing is weird in-house and for your franchise and you're not willing to commit to that risk long-term, then what do? Then it's more important for you to trade Beckham for a guy or for a swap that's like 14 or 12 or whatever. And then you don't have to, you know, then you don't have to move up from 2-1 because you're drafting Chubb anywhere, Barkley or Nelson. right? And then the move from 2-1 doesn't matter at all. And in fact, you should be looking to move back from 2 if you're really if you're not interested in the quarterback. That's why it's so important.
Yeah, this is so hard because if Cook's value, if Cook's in a 4 is worth the 23, is OBJ, how is OBJ and a 6 not worth the 22 and 3 second round picks?
Well, let's call it Cook's in a 5 because of the fact that they give up a 6 and they get the latest 4 that there is.
Fine. Cook's in a 5. How, if Cook's in a 5 for the 23, is that, that's established value. How is Beckham not worth one pick better and 3 second round picks?
No, I think that that's about right. But I'm saying that that one pick, right, I get what you're saying, but I'm saying if I'm the Giants, those 3 picks become less important to me if I'm trying to compete today. Like, I'd rather have... Look,
I don't disagree. We just don't know what they're doing.
Right. Exactly. So I think there's 2 lanes to take here. Either you take the mid to... And I have no idea who's interested. Like, say the Niners are interested. They've lost guys. They don't know. I don't get what they're doing. They were in on Watkins, but they didn't get him. They don't add any receivers. They re-up with Goodwin. I don't think they added anyone, right? Anyone materially. So say the Niners at 9 are interested, right? And so you have the option between 9 and say you have to give up, I don't know, so 9 and whatever, like a 5th, or maybe just a 9 straight up for Beckham, I don't know. Would you rather have that or the 22 and 3 seconds? I mean, I guess the value obviously says, or 2 seconds, I guess, is more accurate. I think the value says you take picks, the group of picks, but in your mind you might say you want, but in your mind you might say, hey, I can get, you know, I don't know, whatever, I can get.
Wait, who are you getting at 9? Are you trying to get
Chubb
and Fitzpatrick? You're not getting Chubb. I think Chubb's off the board. Unless you're taking Chubb too. Okay.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick, that's borderline. You know, you're in that like Fitzpatrick, Nelson, Roquan Smith. Denzel Ward is definitely there. Yeah, I don't like Derwin James as much as other people, but he'll be there.
Right. I'm just saying, like, or you move around, you give yourself the flexibility to add more guys. Like, I think that, but although if you're taking that deal, then, you know, you're trying not to move around. I get it. Like, I think that it's, like you said, it just totally depends on A, what they think of this year's draft, and B, kind of, you know, what their plan is. Like, I mean, you still have Eli no matter what, and I think for that reason, because you have Eli and Solder and you've invested so much in at least the latter, you're kind of on the hook to, I don't know, to do something. Although,
but then you just don't trade Beckham. That's the thing.
Right.
If you're saying I commit to Eli, then you don't trade Beckham.
The problem is that they don't like – they traded JPP. That's the smoking gun here, because if they don't trade JPP, then everything's fine and whatever. I get it. But the fact that they traded him, and by all accounts, he was a fine teammate aside from blowing his hand into smithereens.
But, and lying about it. Like,
And lying about it, yeah. But, I mean, you know, I think that, I don't know. All right, so based on the fact that they traded JB, but then they signed Solder, they don't know what they're doing. So, but I lean towards the fact that they want to draft, I think they want to draft Barkley at 2. I'm Barkley or Chubb, and I really believe them when they say that they like Eli there, and they like, you know, they just spent a pick on what's his name last year, the backup.
Davis Webb's terrible.
Davis Webb, oh, he is awful. Yeah, but you know, they, whatever. So say that's nothing. They still have the second pick in the second round, and you know, Geis is kind of Gettleman-y, although I don't think he'll be there. And I mean, I don't know. It's fascinating, but I could totally see them not going quarterback at 2, which is why I think that they could trade down there, and then if they trade from 2-5 or whatever, 2-6, or take the Bills deal or whatever, and then now you have room to move around, and then you can trade Beckham for another pick, and you're still kind of interesting next year, even if you do trade Beckham, and you don't want to invest a long-term deal in Beckham, clearly. So that, so that's your point, and I agree with that.
For the record, having watched NFL drafts for as long as we have, I think quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4.
I agree. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think that the Giants need to sit at 2, though. I don't think that they want a quarterback.
I don't know. It's hard. If you're a team like the Giants, if you're a team like Denver, you know, God willing, you only pick this high
very,
very rarely. So you can't really squander that opportunity to get that potential franchise signal caller. We're going to have plenty of time to talk about Odell Beckham Jr. over the, well, maybe a trade next week. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, really? I feel like it's going to happen. Hey, wait, betting money. Do you think that they'll trade? Will Odell Beckham be a Giant on draft day, April 27th? Is he a Giant or no?
At the beginning of draft day or at the end of draft day?
At the end of April 27th. April 26th is the draft, I believe. So April 27th. Is he a Giant or no?
No. No.
Wow.
I think it happens in the next
Browns?
10 days, honestly. I think it happens pretty soon.
That's awesome.
I wouldn't be surprised if this trade is actually telling us that Beckham's going to be traded somewhere else. That, you know, we know the Rams came out and said, oh, Brandon Cooks the whole time.
Cooks.
But I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 2 days we see a Beckham trade. And, you know, looking back at it, that's the reason that this Cooks trade happened.
Could not agree with you more. My first reaction was the Patriots were willing to go two firsts. And my second reaction was the Rams wanted Beckham. Everyone said it. Peter King just came out yesterday with an article saying the Rams' interest is real. So, you know, that's there. And the Rams just simply – something happened where they didn't want to give up. Something above the 23rd pick is out there for Beckham, probably more than the 23rd and their third rounder is my guess.
Right. Well, something's going to happen. I don't think Beckham's going to be traded. We have to get you out of here in a second, but I want to talk about one last story just because it's so crazy. This is the kind of story that I would have expected to see 2 days ago. I'm not sure if you've seen this yet. Drew Brees has filed a $15 million lawsuit against a jewelry company, and specifically a man named Vihad Marathi of CJ Charles Jewelry. After Brees bought $15 million worth of jewelry, and he had the items independently appraised and found out that they were worth more than $9 million less than he paid for them. I just want this to sink in. Drew Brees bought $15 million worth of jewelry.
Look, Drew Brees clearly doesn't believe in the power of the American dollar. I mean, that's got to be it, because he's trying to sink his money into gold and diamonds, but that makes – this is so – I don't know.
Drew
Brees. I don't
Brees.
Want this to sound the wrong way, but Drew Brees of all people, right?
Exactly.
Is that what you're getting at? Like, of all the people, like, yeah. Drew Brees has had a weird offseason, hasn't he? Like, between this and, like, his contract stuff, like, you gotta wonder if he's taken a couple too many shots of that.
Yeah, if somebody says, hey, Odell Beckham Jr. bought $15 million worth of jewelry, I would have, like, of course he did. It's Thursday. Why would he not
do
that?
Yeah, or Gronk. Or,
yeah,
you know,
but,
there's plenty
well,
of
Gronk
guys.
Is actually really, really frugal. But
I've heard that too.
But he apparently has not spent one penny of his NFL contract so far.
Right.
But yeah, this.
Oh
this
yeah,
his
all endorsement. Yeah.
So now it's worth pointing out that $8.18 million of that was for a diamond ring, assumedly for his wife. But
right.
Or is you know, whatever. Maybe there's a lot more to Drew Brees that we don't know about.
Yeah.
It's for the other one.
Obviously.
Drew Brees.
Yeah,
$15 million worth of jewelry. What have you been doing with your life?
Yeah, dude. I don't know what's been going on there in New Orleans. There's some weird stuff going, but yeah, that's some poor cash management.
I mean, if you got it, spend it, I guess. And also, how do you file a lawsuit on? I kind of want to have Dan on this. Maybe I will tack on a segment at the end of the show with Dan Bauer talking about this. But
oh boy, like, give the people what they want.
If I were to go to Best Buy right now and I bought a television for $4,000, and then I had it independently appraised at $1,500, I can then sue Best Buy? No, I paid what they asked for it.
Get it appraised before. Well, so he should have gotten like a certificate from the GIA or whatever, the Gem Institute or whatever it is. And I don't know if he did or not. If it was fake, then yes, he could definitely sue them. I think the reason why it's caught so much, you know, newsworthy headlines or whatever is because you know, the fact that he spent $8 million on one ring is just beyond reason. So, yeah. But I think that he should have gotten a cert. And if he didn't ask for it or didn't get it, then that's 100% on him, especially when it's that expensive.
Drew Brees, y'all. Who knew? Big pimpin'.
Who knew?
All right, well, that's been the Underdog episode number 66. It's been the Underdog episode number 66. I'm Chris Wardell. He's Anshu Khanna. Thanks for listening. Please keep supporting us, rating, reviewing, doing all that great stuff. Thank you so much. We'll see you right back here next week.